We'll convene the meeting. We do have a quorum present, and we have the minutes for March 4th.
You know, I think I'm going to do this.
Representative Huntley, would you care to move the minutes?
I would move the minutes.
Representative Huntley moves the minutes for March 4th, 2014. Any discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
They don't hang on the carpet. That's the
motion carried. The first bill is House File 2480 by Representative Seltzer, dealing with school nutrition policy. And it does have an appropriation. Representative Seltzer, the chair moves that House File 2480 be recommended to be placed on the general register. And if you would care to explain the bill for us, please.
Thank you, Chair Carlson. And I want to thank the committee members for hearing this bill today. Today we have the opportunity to help our working poor by ensuring that their children get at least two nutritious meals during the school day. Some children in Minnesota today are not. As you know, in 2003, under Governor Pawlenty, Minnesota eliminated the 30-cent fee collected for a reduced-price breakfast, which helped to increase access to and participation in the most important meal of the day. Our governor and legislature at that time had the wisdom to look at the federal poverty guidelines and realize the budget crunch that families who qualify for reduced lunch face. As we all know, prices have climbed since then, especially for those foods we would put into the nutritious category. My bill would eliminate the 40-cent fee per lunch for those who qualify for reduced lunch. This would enable us to partner with school districts and provide them with the funds and clear direction that these students need to receive the standard nutritious hot lunch based on the new upgraded federal guidelines. Some folks have expressed the feeling that children whose families fall into the category above the federal poverty guidelines but below the 185% of the poverty guideline should pay something towards these lunches, sort of a good faith effort, as it were. But let's just take a moment and examine a budget for a family of three, say a mom and two children, and the mom is earning $32,412 a year, which places that family at about 166% of the federal poverty guidelines, making them eligible for reduced price lunch. This family has a $2,701 monthly income in the metro. At this income level, the family does not qualify for cash assistance or SNAP. A reasonable monthly budget for this family, not including clothing or other basic necessities, would be $1,100 a month for housing and utilities, $350 a month for employer-subsidized health and dental care for three, $450 a month for transportation if you want to include a car payment, insurance, and gas, $750 for before and after school care. That would be 3.5 hours a day for two children. Now, that leaves about $51 a month for food unless you drop some of the above expenses. Now, you can argue that, you know, some of these costs are fungible. Perhaps there is no monthly car payment, but then you're probably dealing, in that case, with an older car, and there will be repairs. Children need clothing, and there are other costs associated with raising a child that you and I could name. If there is a large car repair bill, let's say this may be the month mom or dad did not pay the reduced lunch fee. A child who has decided not to have lunch because he or she knows that mom has not paid that fee is more likely to go home and overeat on the starchier foods that family can afford. They are less likely to do well academically at school, as we know that good nutrition plays a huge role in learning. So this is a great opportunity to, in a bipartisan manner, make the statement that no child shall go hungry in a school in Minnesota because of the inability to pay. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Any discussion? Representative Hornstein.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is one of these issues where I think people did some really good advocacy work, you know, outside of the Capitol, and I wanted to, you know, acknowledge Legal Aid. There's an organization called Mazone that did wonderful work on this, and I really want to thank them on the record for, you know, making sure that the legislature addressed this, because sometimes, you know, these issues are very clear, I think, and we don't always see that, and I think their advocacy really got this front and center on the table, and I wanted to thank them for that.
Well, thank you, and we do have many letters of support that were included in the packet, and I suspect that if need be, there would have been many more. So with that, if there's no further discussion, I renew my motion that House File 2480 be recommended to be placed on the general register. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
We now have the LCCMR bill before us. Representative Purcell and
thank you, Mr. Chair.
The chair moves that House File 1874 be recommended to be placed on the general register to put the bill appropriately before us. Representative Purcell.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members, this is the LCCMR bill. We do this every year, and I have the pleasure of carrying this bill. This year, we have 71 projects in this bill spread out around the state, and many, if not most of them, are of statewide significance. And we're, as you can see from your materials, looking to spend about $29 million of the lottery proceeds in this bill. So with that, Mr. Chairman, I'd if you'd indulge, I'd like to turn it over to Ms. Susan Thornton of the LCCMR staff to explain the bill further, and we'll take questions as you have.
Okay, Ms. Thornton, and by the way, I think we may have at least one of the commissioners here, maybe more, that serve on LCCMR. If you want to, Ms. Thornton, identify who's in the audience. I used to be on LCCMR for several years, but I haven't been for a while. Some of them are still on that I served with. There may be some new faces. Ms. Thornton.
Mr. Chair and members, my name is Susan Thornton, the Director of the Legislative Citizen Commission, Minnesota Resources, LCCMR. And as the Chair mentioned, Ms. Nancy Gibson is in the audience. She is a non-legislative appointed member by Governor Dayton. And what we have before you today is the work of the 17 members of the LCCMR for the second year of the biennium. And those 17 members, just a reminder, there are 5 members from the House, 5 members from the Senate, and 7 non-legislative appointed members that serve on that commission. Just a little background, Mr. Chair, is the what's before you is funding from the Environment and Natural Resources Trust Fund, which was first set up and constitutionally dedicated in 1988 and then rededicated 2 more times. And that's for 40% of the net lottery proceeds. The lottery puts about $33 million a year of net proceeds into the Environment and Natural Resources Trust Fund, and then that's invested by the State Board of Investment. And then what's available is up to, this is in the Constitution, is up to 5.5% of the market value of the trust fund on the even year before the next biennium. So for this biennium, what the market value was $614 million on June 30th, 2012, so that's approximately $34 million that's available for each year of this biennium. In last fiscal year's bill, There was also the spoke to $4.3 million of this fiscal year's dollars for the Aquatic Invasive Species Center. So that's why the bill before you is approximately $29 million. And, Mr. Chair, I can go through in summary or individually. There are 71 appropriations here. Even going quickly, it takes some time, but I'm happy to do whatever level of detail you and the members would like.
Martin, we have the handouts here, so maybe if you can go through it in summary, and then if members all have the listing of all of the various appropriations, so if they have specific questions, we can entertain those next. Ms. Thornton.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. And the handouts that you have in front of you, there are three of them. One has a pie chart on it that briefly explains the dates, the process that went through of the 192 proposals that were received, and the process of the hearing process and the selection process that the commission went through in order to have these 71 recommendations in front of you. And it shows them in their subdivisions by the pie chart, and then also by affiliation, the recipients. And then, Mr. Chair and members, there's a spreadsheet of the bill, and then there is also a legal sheet that is a summary that I will be using to go over briefly of the 71 appropriations that are in the bill before you.
No.
So, Mr. Chair, subdivision 3 is water resources, approximately $4.6 million. It has 13 appropriations in it, and it's research and analysis related to wastewater treatment systems and water contaminants. Evaluation of land and water management practices to reduce sediment and nutrient loadings, manage water flow, and protect aquatic wildlife. And we also have appropriations in here with USGS related to better groundwater management practices. There's an appropriation related to the assessment of the high mercury levels in certain watersheds within fisheries and looking at the food web. Design and installation of reusing rainwater for evaporative chillers. And then a small project for training and technical assistance for community groups to implement local water planning. Subdivision 4, Mr. Chair and members, is a subdivision related to aquatic and terrestrial invasive species, approximately $2.3 million. There are 6 appropriations here. The first one relates to invasive carp species and looking at locks and dams number 2 through 8 and what are some alternative engineering designs to make them into better invasive carp barriers, the infrastructure. There's a regional in the Red River area. There's a regional aquatic invasive species prevention program that's intended to be a model. And then for the terrestrial invasive pests, we're continuing to do the research or fund the research for emerald ash borer, and then a new initiative for the brown marmorated stink bug and the mountain pine beetle to understand those risks, hopefully get ahead of the curve on those pests to our natural resources. Mr. Chair, Subdivision 5 is foundational natural resources data and information, about $4.2 million. There are 14 appropriations here. This has been a topic that the Commission has a very strong commitment to ensure that we continue and maintain and update these foundational natural resource needs. This subdivision also has wildlife research in it. These are some of our first appropriations related to pollinators. There are 6 in here. There's update of the statewide land use cover, and we're looking at the impacts on freshwater native mussels. There is an appropriation to update and modernize our public record drainage records. There are some historic databases related to ecosystems and forest resources to hopefully understand those trends and the ecological needs taking place. We have 2 appropriations in here related to continuing research on our declining moose population. One focuses on diet, the other on the impact of temperatures, and continuing to look at adult and calf mortality. We've got to have an appropriation in here related to native butterfly species decline and long-term research and breeding. We are continuing to assess the impact of the Deepwater Horizon oil spill on our loon and pelican populations. And then we've got a small appropriation in here related to a website public-oriented for plant identification. Mr. Chair, I'll move on to Subdivision 6, which is titled Methods to Protect, Restore, Enhance Land, Water, and Habitat, approximately $3.7 million. There are 11 appropriations here. These, again, continue, several of them related to our pollinators and pollinator decline, including a long-term research and monitoring program at the University of Minnesota. We've got to have appropriations related to enhancing our pollinator habitats and also looking at the role of systemic pesticides in pollinator decline. There's an appropriation in here related to watershed protection planning for southeast Minnesota, one from northeast Minnesota related to restoration of our white cedar species. Their evaluation of nutrient capture from waterways, biofuel feedstock generation, wetland habitat management, and mineland restoration using some sediment waste reutilization. And there's an appropriation related to enhancing the water system, the water being used or more efficient for water conservation and energy conservation of an aquaponics facility. Mr. Chair, Subdivision 7 is Land Acquisition for Habitat and Recreation, $6.9 million for 6 appropriation. It's appropriation for acquisition and restoration for our state scientific and natural areas, an appropriation for acquisition for lands and parks in our metro regional park system, an appropriation for acquisition of land along the St. Croix River that's adjacent to Browns Creek Trail for a park, and also for further the development of the Mesabi Trail in northeast Minnesota. Mr. Chair, Subdivision 8 is titled Air Quality, Climate Change, and Renewable Energy. There are 9 appropriations. Renewable energy production, including solar, geothermal, waste product reutilization, and biofuels, and then also enhancing local energy production in our rural areas. Subdivision 9 is related to environmental education, about $3.7 million. There are 9 appropriations, really looking at the delivery and enhancement of helping students in outdoor experiential experiences, natural resource professions, and then also information related to pollinators, wolves, raptors, and climate change. Subdivision 10 is, there are 3 appropriations there, approximately $244,000. One is for the legislatively mandated legacy website, and the Environment and Natural Resources Trust Fund is included in the funding on that legacy website that is mainly set up for the new legacy amendment. There's also an appropriation in there to DNR to perform the fiscal contract management for appropriations that are not to a state agency, because those appropriations are done on a reimbursement basis. And then there's an appropriation to bring our database system and our records management for LCCMR into this century. We have over 1,800 past appropriations and 50 years worth of appropriations and findings, and we're hoping to make that more readily accessible and searchable for the legislature and for members of the public. And then, Mr. Chair, there's some rider language within the bill, pretty standard related to each of the appropriations. There is some amendment to 116P related to that was adopted last session that makes that more workable. And there is also a repealer of the sunset of the LCCMR. Mr. Chair. I went through that quickly, but I hope that was sufficient.
Okay, and Representative Holbert.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm really concerned about some language on page 33, lines 23 to 29, that define data. And also, what's most concerning is the statement that the commission may waive the application of this paragraph for specific projects. So this bill would give unprecedented power to the commission to waive Chapter 13 requirements. Under House rules now, Chapter 13 items are supposed to go to the Civil Law Committee. This bill did not go to the Civil Law Committee. And with that, first of all, the acquisition data such as appraisals is vague. Chapter 13 lays out the process for appraisals, when information is made public, who has access to it, when in the process. There's no reason that this program can't conform to the standards that everybody else does. And I have never seen a commission being given the authority to waive state law. And so I would wonder what the bill author would think about that. I'm kind of moving towards an oral amendment to take that language out and or a motion to send the bill to civil law.
Representative Purcell.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Holberg, I'm advised that this language has been in the bill previously, perhaps not in this structured format. I can't attest to it. This is the first time I've carried the bill. But that's the only advice I can give at this time.
Ms. Thornton?
Mr. Chair and Representative Holberg, excuse me. The history on paragraph J, and it might be the structure here, as I read it now with your comments, thank you. The intent of this is that a recipient of the dollars provide us what we call a transaction report so that we know whether the recipient, there were any donations to an organization that went along with some of these acquisitions taking place. The original language had the commission on line 33.27 waiving receiving a transaction report, and that was part of original conference committee language from several years ago. I'm just giving you the history. I'm not advocating one thing or another. I believe line 33.2, I know line 33.23 has been added in the last couple of years by the legislature as it has gone through the process. My staff, and I believe that may have been, I don't recall. We have not used it, and I do not have a staff recommendation one way or the other as to how you wish to proceed. Now that I understand your concerns.
Mr. Chair, well, I'm a little, I don't know what, I haven't heard what the author's preference here is. Would you prefer to take it out, or would you prefer to go to civil, or what's your preference at this point? I think it's, I'm just very concerned that we would give the commission this kind of authority.
What I would like to know, Representative Holberg, what's when you say that this is kind of rewritten? What's in current law if this were to go? Representative Thornton?
Mr. Chair, members, I believe it is current law is identical. Current session law is identical to this. There was no commission change to this section in this last set of recommendations.
So it's session law, which would then expire if you don't have this language in, as I understand it.
Mr. Chair, members, yes, this session law, this rider language applies only to the appropriations within this bill.
Okay. So previous bills have had this language, but that would be, because it was session law, then would expire. So that's the purpose of restating it now in session law. Representative Simon, or Representative Holbrook, were you done?
Well, Mr. Chair, obviously, you know, we've missed this before, but I mean, I guess I'll make a motion to delete it from the bill, and if they want to get better, cleaner language before the floor, but to give a commission this authority, I think, is unprecedented. So, Mr. Chair, with that, I would move an oral amendment, lines 30, or page 33, line 23, after the period, deletes, and then through line 29 on the same page.
Okay, the motion is before us. Representative Simon on the amendment.
Mr. Chair, thanks. I was just about to suggest a substantially similar amendment, which would have been to delete just the last sentence.
Yes.
Instead of the two sentences. To me, the part that's more alarming is the last sentence, not necessarily the second one. I agree that the second to last sentence is, you know, could be clearer and sharper and could have been crafted more specifically, but the last one does give considerable discretion to the office without saying what the criteria are. It just says may waive for specific projects, doesn't even say why. And I'm sure this was an oversight somewhere, but probably best to clean it up here. So, Representative Holbrook, you know, I know we have a pending motion before us, but would you be willing to kind of pare it back to just the last sentence?
Well,
and then maybe folks can work on some clarifying language on the second to last sentence on the way from here to the floor.
And
Representative Holbrook.
Mr. Chair and Representative Simon, I understand what you're saying, but I think with a commitment from the author that we'd work on the acquisition data, from my perspective, continuity of standards throughout the system makes it easier for everybody, and so they are subject to Chapter 13, which does lay out standards for data disclosure during acquisition of land, et cetera. So, if you're going to say that this group should have some other way of doing things, then I think you make a valid point. If you believe that we should have continuity across the system, then I don't think they need that sentence either.
Representative Simon.
Well, then, Mr. Chair, I understand that. I think then, just in the interest of time and to give the office a little more time to craft language that they might want to insert later, I would support the Holbrook motion.
Okay, any further discussion? Seeing none, then, all those in favor of the Holbrook amendment to strike on page 33, lines 33.4 through 33.29.
No.
Or no, excuse
me. No, 33.
Oh, it's 23.
Yeah.
You weren't striking the whole thing. Okay. Okay, I was. Page 33, line 23, delete everything after the period. And then page 33, delete lines 24 through 29. Is that was your amendment?
Right.
Yes,
okay.
Mr. Chair.
Helpful to have it in writing. There we go. Okay. Everybody understand the amendment? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed?
No.
Motion carried. Any other questions on the bill? Representative Dean.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Ms. Thornton, I'm just looking at the watershed water budgets for management of Minnesota groundwater on page 5, lines 12 through 23. It talks about $129,000 appropriation for USGS to complete an evaluation of groundwater for two counties. And it doesn't spell out which counties those are. Can you talk a little bit about that for me, please? And also, I'm interested in White Bear Lake and in that area. for the groundwater management. Is this the only area in the bill that addresses that, or should I look at other areas of the bill?
Representative Purcell or Ms. Thornton?
We're digging here, Mr. Chairman.
Ms. Thornton.
Mr. Chair, Representative Dean, I found it first. you were speaking to subdivision 3H and 3I, and actually those could have been combined into one paragraph. 3H really complements the geologic atlas and what DNR needs for water appropriations, and it's focused on the confining units, which are the pathways for water contaminant movement, the hydrologic processes, and infiltration. Subdivision 3I will be a pilot, and this pilot will be taking place in the details are in the work plan, of which I have work plans for all of these in this notebook, and they're posted online. The pilots will be in St. Louis and Goodhue counties, and this is looking, the Atlas does groundwater storage. This will be looking at the quantity of water flowing within a watershed, and it adds to some current modeling. So will these further inform the hydrologic processes knowledge and the geologic process or geologic storage that we know? Yes. Are these specific to Northeast Metro area and White Bear Lake? No, they are not. As you may recall, there was an appropriation through the Clean Water Fund last year to USGS and others that was very specific to White Bear Lake, and we had had a proposal that cycle too, which formed the basis of that clean water appropriation that was made. But this cycle we did not receive, that I recall, a proposal specifically related to our Northeast Metro Lakes and White Bear Lake.
Thank you.
Representative
Guineas
on this point?
Yes. Ms. Thornton brought up one of the things I was going to bring up, that White Bear Lake was specifically addressed with our clean water appropriation last year in two ways. She mentioned one of them, a very specific appropriation to USGS, and then there was another appropriation to the Met Council, a much larger appropriation to look at the whole metro area. And obviously this area was going to have great concentrated effort, or the area that you talked about.
Representative Dean.
Thank you.
Hey, any further discussion? Please. Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Purcell, in the bill you have a section that talks about the Wolf Education Center. Is that any relation to the Howling for Wolves component? Is this part of that mission, or what can you tell me about that piece and how the money dollars will be used?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Anderson, I'm going to tell you what I know without looking into the file here. That is an education program that's aimed, and I've seen a little bit of an outline of the education plan, if you will, to bring facts to the table surrounding wolves and their part in the ecosystem in Minnesota. And it includes everything, you know, from how they live and what they eat and all of those kind of activities. So I look at it as a real good opportunity to educate people on wolves in Minnesota. I look at it as something really good.
Representative Anderson. Any further discussion? Seeing none, then I renew my motion that House File 1874 be recommended to be placed on the General Register as amended. Any further discussion? Seeing none, then all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed?
No.
Motion carried. Some of you may have noticed that we were scheduled possibly for 6 o'clock tonight. That was only if we didn't get these two bills completed. We are now done, so you can remove the 6 o'clock meeting from your agenda.
Mr. With that, Chair, do you envision us having another meeting this week?
There could possibly be. We're getting close to the targets, and at some point we're going to need to schedule a meeting for the House budget resolution. That's yet to be determined, but that is a possibility.
Okay, thank you.
With that, meeting adjourned.